On this episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks, I review an absolutely electric baseball series as the Gamecocks took down the number one ranked Texas Longhorns. And then it is bracketology as the women's March Madness NCAA tournament bracket was revealed. I'll talk about matchups and what are we expecting in that to come. All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 50 of Cox Talking Gamecocks. I am your host, Tim Cox, where I will keep every episode from 1801 to 2001. And I don't want to get all sappy or anything like that, but episode 50. How about that? I mean, really, this project, this podcast, it has been so much fun. I'm enjoying every second of it, connecting with Gamecock fans on social media, reading the reviews about the podcast. It's just incredible. And this is only the beginning, but episode 50 feels like a little bit of a milestone, stuck with something. It's been really, really fun to see it grow and everything like that. And we're only just beginning, baby. Welcome to the show. But the vibes are rising. Can you feel it, Gamecock Nation? The vibes, are they rising? Are the seas rising a little bit? Because this weekend sure felt like it. Sure felt like a turnaround in momentum, in attitudes. One day, 2 days of positive Gamecock Twitter. Man, total 180 compared to where we were last episode and last weekend as well. It is just nice to be a Gamecock right now because there's a lot going on and we're going to dive into it all. But before I get to that, we're going to have to start with our fun fact of Gamecock athletics. And as a junior in 2018, USC men's swimmer Finn Minuth, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Finn, became the first in school history to capture multiple individual conference titles in the same year, taking home the 200 butterfly and the 500 freestyle. Shout out Finn Minuth. Also, shout out the butterfly. It's my favorite stroke. Badass. Shout out Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps, a big fan of Columbia. If you know, you know. Moving on, though. But it is a big time. Lot to cover this episode. And we are going to start with a quick football note, actually. So, a little bit of a... I guess not the best news to report here. Safety Jalen Dickerson, he announced he is medically retiring. He's actually going to join the staff as, I think, a grad assistant, which is great on Shane Beamer to do that. Probably a very tough transition time for the young man, Jalen Dickerson. And, I mean, he never got a fair shake at it. He was talented, and he was just always hurt. So to see him medically retiring, it's not a surprise, but it's tough. Well, I really wanted to see if he could put together a full season at a position that, I mean, right now, selfishly, like South Carolina needs help at. But you know what? I wish him nothing but the best. And maybe coaching is what he was meant to do. So, Jalen, wish you all the best and wish the football team all the best as spring football's here. They are going to get after it. The spring game is right around the corner and it's that time of year. So that's really fun to keep track on. So we have baseball and women's basketball, big-time news. I'm going to start with baseball against Texas. It was the big-time matchup that we all know. The game schedule kind of got twisted around because of weather in Columbia, so there was no game on Friday. Instead, it was Saturday, and then a very confusing doubleheader on Sunday. But nevertheless, we're going to get there because it is a series win for the Gamecocks. I was going to do a dramatic build-up and do game one this, game two that, and then it comes down to game three, but hell no. Y'all are on Twitter more than I am, probably. Y'all are educated fans. So it is a big, big, big series win that, frankly, nobody saw coming. I mean, we were all saying that I hope we just don't get embarrassed, right? I was saying, hopefully you can maybe steal one, and then, you know, who knows what will happen after that. But after the debacle that happened against the team from the upstate, and then the mess that happened against Xavier, the vibes were down. And it felt like that this team was going against some big adversity with injuries and cold bats, and it just didn't feel like the time to go against the number one team in the country. And this team responded. I don't know who said something in that clubhouse, whether it was Kingston, maybe one of the veteran leaders, but something was said, and this team responded. Game one on Saturday, it was a loss, 9-5. The losing pitcher was Noah Hall. But, you know, Texas jumped out quick, but we answered in the bottom of the first, and we hung with them in the early innings. And it was really in that fifth and the eighth inning where Texas pulled away. But despite giving up nine, and, you know, it's 9-5, I felt like this team showed some fight and they showed some grit, especially coming out in that first inning and answering. In fact, taking the lead after the first inning. And it just felt like it wasn't as bad as it could have been. You know, it felt like they jumped out early and everyone's like, oh man, like here we go again. And no, I mean, yeah, you gave up a good amount of runs. And you kind of felt like that might have been the case. And we hung with them, though. It really didn't get out of hand. You only lost by four runs. So some player highlights here for you. Brant Belk with a monster day. 4-for-5 with a double and a home run. Andrew Eister, the Iceman, going 2-for-4. And Josiah Seitler, excuse me, going 1-for-3 with run one ribby. But, folks, we have a public enemy on our hands. Public enemy number one in Gamecock country is Ivan Melendez. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to have to look up the bat flip heard around Columbia. But basically, this guy jacked a home run to left center field and did a bat flip, but it wasn't a bat flip. I'm for the bat flips. I think it's fun. It's energy. It's different in baseball. But he flipped the bat towards the pitching mound, threw the bat essentially at the pitcher. That is bullshit. And that is there is no place for that in any sport, right? None. And it was disgusting. And he is public enemy number one. And the crappy part is the guy's really freaking good at baseball. So he just kept hitting all series. But honestly, though, I think that disrespect might have woken up this team. I think they looked around after the game. Obviously, they didn't mount to come back that game, but I think they said, you know what? No, we're not going to take that on our own ball field, and we have too much pride to let that crap happen in game two and three. I honestly think that it kind of shook them up, and they probably looked around and said, wait a second here. Like, we're the South Carolina Gamecocks. Like, we have pride. We have a beautiful ballpark. We have a beautiful history, and we need to do something about it. And we're in a tough patch right now, but that's not going to define us. And I think that that's what happened. Because on game two, it was the first one of the doubleheader. It was only a seven-inning game. The game one was only seven innings. That was a win. Horns down. 1-4-2. Will Sanders is your winning pitcher, and he did Will Sanders things, going six innings, giving up two runs. Michael Braswell getting the save, doing Michael Braswell things, going one inning and getting the save. Now, a lot of people questioned, why was Will Sanders not pitching in the first game to put your best foot forward and try to get your win that first game of the series? But I honestly think that this is what Mark Kingston had in mind when he put Will Sanders starting in this game. That was a shortened game. I think the idea was exactly what happened. Will Sanders is going to pitch well for six innings or maybe go the whole way. But then you have Braswell, who has been a solid closer, and you bring him in. So that's exactly what happened. And it's pretty smart when you look at it, considering it's a doubleheader. You don't want to have to double dip into your bullpen. And with Will, you never want to take anything for granted or think that something is a guarantee. But so far this year, and even in his career to this point, the kid has been lights out. The kid is solid. So it felt like you could pencil him in for five or six. That way you save some arms in your pen. And with Sanders on the mound, especially after this outing, I think we can hang with anybody, really. And I mean, while our bats may have stumbled at times, I don't think this lineup is really as top-heavy as many people believe. So to me, and this is in general right here, right? This is a Carolina Gamecocks sort of overall, overarching take, if you will. But if we can get some solid performance out of whoever starts, and I'm talking 5 or 6 innings with minimal damage, then I believe we can hang in just about any game. And not everyone has to try and be Will Sanders. Not everyone is going to put up those type of numbers. But this was a good example of doing just enough, right, to get your lineup to do the rest. You know, Will wasn't perfect. You know, he gave up 2 runs, gave up a couple walks, but really minimal damage. And then that's all we needed. That's all we needed. It was very, very impressive. Plus the jerseys we wore in that game with the black, with the garnet Carolina across the chest. That's chef's kiss right there. That is a badass look. But some player highlights here from this game. Brant Belk, 2 for 3. Braylon Wimmer, 3 for 3. How about that? If Wimmer can come alive, he is a guy that really makes that lineup go a little bit more deeper. And that's what we need. If we can get our 6, 7, 8, 9 hitters more involved, that's when I say this lineup is not as top-heavy as some people may have believed. At times, it looked like that. But what we saw in this series is that when it's not that, it actually is a pretty dangerous lineup. And that brings us to Game 3, which was the second game of a doubleheader Sunday. This was 9 innings, so you see 7, 9, kind of confusing. But this is a double horns down. 1 horns down for the first game of the doubleheader, the second horns down for the second game of the doubleheader, 2 horns all the way down in the dirt. South Carolina wins 9-4 and takes the series against the #1 team in the country. So nice, I had to say it twice and talk about a swing in energy in that dugout. My goodness. And don't let that score fool you, really. Carolina was kicking their ass the whole game. The whole game. It was 9-1 going into the 9th inning, but Texas, they had the top of the order up at the 9th. They were able to get a couple runs across, and it did get a little dicey there. It was Wesley Sweat who was in for his second inning of work. Maybe got a little tired. Maybe the lineup saw enough pitches that they were able to put some good contact on it. They got a couple of runs across. But don't let that fool you. We were kicking their ass all day. And this series marked the first time that an SEC team has beat Texas. I talked about that in the preview show. But this is something to be very, very proud of, what South Carolina did this series. Freshman Matthew Becker got the start and pitched an absolute gem in what was basically a spot start for the kid. 6 innings, 1 hit, 1 run. What a brilliant line. And he had pitched earlier in the season 1 or 2 innings here and there. He looked pretty good, you know, gave up a run or two here and there. But after seeing this, and then when you look at his overall body of work from the earlier games he's pitched in, where pretty efficient when you look at it, 1 inning or 2 innings most, you know, 0 runs, 1 run. He did have 2 runs given up against Xavier, I believe, but everyone gave up runs that day. Matthew Becker could be that answer for who could be a more consistent weekend starter for us. Maybe someone to go somewhat regularly behind Will Sanders. I don't know. You don't want to put too much stock in it after one game in a freshman nonetheless, but that is damn impressive against the #1 team in the country to win the series on a doubleheader. The kid rose up to the moment, and he was juiced up, and it was awesome to see. Some other highlights here for y'all. Andrew Eister, 2 for 4 with 2 RBI. Kevin Madden, 2 for 4 with 2 RBI. And Brant Belk stays hot. Got to be the MVP of this series. 2 for 4 with 1 RBI. And I loved it. The Texas dugout, they were jawing a little bit. We were up big, and he went to go lay down a bunt. I think it was in the 8th inning, maybe. And he ripped a base hit to right field, just smoked it. And then he stood on the base, put his hand to his ear, and was like, yeah, keep talking. Keep talking. Texas baseball annoys me. They were jawing that. And then there was some guy who dragged the on-deck circle closer to home base because he got called out for standing too close to home. Like, what the hell even was that? You ever seen anything like that before? Like, what a bunch of crybabies. Yeah, horns. Ugh. Can't believe they're freaking in the SEC now. Yet another team with some shade of orange who I now have to hate. Literally. It's just disgusting. Burnt orange makes me puke. Shout out to the Boz. Shout out, Boz. Now, baseball's next game is the midweek matchup Tuesday against Gardner-Webb. Gardner-Webb's no slouch. You know, they have a lot of pride in their program. My crow to the game here, this is really not baseball focused at all, but this is mental. This is an intangible crow. Maintain the focus you had during this week, particularly on Sunday, and don't underestimate Gardner-Webb. Don't think that it's the midweek game and you can just walk in it. But keep up this momentum and let's go, boys. Now, moving over to women's basketball, it is bracketology. This is March. It is officially time for March Madness, and this is what we have all been waiting for. Ever since the end of last year's tournament, this is what we have waiting for, and our South Carolina Gamecocks are the number one overall seed, no surprise, best team in the land, which puts us square in the Greensboro region, which is great. Some people were nervous that because the SEC tournament didn't go our way, that we might end up in the Spokane region. God forbid. No, it's all good. It's all good. So now what are we looking at here in this early part of the region? This is going to be a lot of fun to track and update in real time, and it's going to be hectic and confusing during the podcast. I'm going to try to do my best as to predict and preview and recap, but it's madness. It's March Madness, and it's going to be a lot of fun. My first Madness covering it as a podcaster, if you will, and following it so closely, but it's incredible. So our first game is this upcoming Friday against the winner of a 16 seed matchup. It's a play-in game. You know how they do the first four games versus Howard versus Incarnate Word. So couldn't tell you the first thing about either of those two programs. They're 16 seeds. They obviously did okay enough to get there. And I'm going to be previewing that a bit closer on Friday morning's episode when that drops, but spoiler alert, couldn't even get that right. Ugh, I tried to be cool. Spoiler alert, I think the Gamecocks are going to handle business against the 16 seed, y'all. But nevertheless, my initial reaction to our quadrant of the bracket, because that's what we care about, is pretty good, honestly. Like, I liked it. I like our draw. We avoid UConn, Maryland, Kentucky, NC State. They're a one seed, but avoided some of these teams that I felt could have provided a tough challenge in that Sweet 16 or Elite 8. Now, Arizona caught my eye, of course, of what they did last year, and that would be an interesting matchup seeing as we could potentially go against them in the Sweet 16. But what really caught my eye was that Iowa, the damn Hawkeyes, are the two seed in our bracket. Now, you never want to predict something in the madness that is the NCAA tournament. But if the seeding holds true and there's some chalk in our quadrant, you have a matchup of Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark, the two National Player of the Year candidates, the one true one in our eyes and really the objective eyes. But really, if we face them, it is the absolute perfect time to show that coach what exactly a team full of All-Americans looks like in person. Dawn Staley, you are going to flex your muscle all over the Iowa Hawkeyes. If you'll remember, that coach was complaining that Aaliyah Boston shouldn't have as much hype for National Player of the Year because she plays with a team of All-Americans. As if that's some sin, and it's as if an MVP or a player of the year has never been on the best team. The most ridiculous logic I've ever heard in my life. But guess what, coach? You got your wish. Your precious Caitlin Clark can go against the big bad Gamecocks. I'm stoked. I'm stoked for it. I hope that happens. Bring them on. Literally bring them on. That would be to go to the Final Four in the Elite Eight. But it's going to be a lot of fun. It's madness to cover. And this is it. I mean, this is something I talked about when the season started. This is something we've all talked about in the offseason. This is why you do it in basketball. When you're as good as we are, when you're a powerhouse like we are, yes, regular season wins are nice. Yes, conference championships and titles are nice. But those are cherries on top. What you want is the big trophy, is the big banner. That's what you want, and that's what we're eyeing. Eyes on the prize, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch what this team can do. But with that, y'all, that wraps up this episode. Really fun one. The vibes are back up. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. And please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will catch y'all on the flip side. Let's go, Cox.